Hello and welcome to this episode of Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond, right here on UK Health Radio. Today I want you to consider if one of the most powerful tools for changing how you feel isn't something you need to learn, but something you're already surrounded by every single day. Yes, sound. Because sound isn't just the music you choose, it's the constant stream of frequencies, rhythms, tones and textures that surround us, immerse us, shaping how we feel, how we think, how our body responds, moment by moment. And sound doesn't just pass through us or resonate around us, does it? It lands, it registers, it changes us, it influences our physiology and our psychology. In fact, my next guest says sound waves activate our brain and body in multiple ways at once. They trigger emotion, they guide movement, they evoke memory, and they have the potential to transport and transform us. And yet, in a world that often feels loud and fast and overstimulating, we've lost some of this awareness of how to work with sound, how to use it not just as a background, but as a real tool for regulation, for reconnection, and for healing. And this is where today's conversation begins, because I am joined by someone who has spent decades exploring sound, not just as music, but as a deeply immersive experience. Brian D'Souza is a globally recognized sound artist, music producer, curator, and DJ based here in London. He's the founder of Swell Studio and Open Ear Music, and the creative mind behind immersive platforms and projects, including A State of Flow and the highly anticipated Soniferous app. His work sits at the intersection of sound and space and human experience, inviting us to listen differently and to feel more deeply. And to understand sound, not just as something we hear, but something we resonate with, something that deeply moves us and we experience with our whole body. So today we're exploring sound, what it does to us, for us, and how, with just a little more awareness, it might become one of the most accessible and powerful resources we have. It is my absolute pleasure to be joined by Brian D'Souza. Brian, thank you for joining me on the show today.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Michelle.
No problem at all. So tell us, for those that are listening who don't know your background, Brian, tell us about what got you into the immersive world of sound.
I think music's been a lifelong passion of mine. You know, my earliest memories were formed around musical experiences, you know, listening to songs when I was a kid, and then getting involved with, you know, accumulating a large selection of vinyl records and CDs and everything in my teenage years, you know, spending all my pocket money down at the record store to try and find the latest releases I was hearing on the radio. And then inevitably, in my late teens, going into my university days, becoming a DJ and a promoter of music, you know, running events, music events, live music, DJ club nights, etc., all throughout university. And I started to recognize like just how powerful the medium of music was, you know, not just for me and my and shaping my own memories and experiences of my childhood, but also just as a social connector, you know, between my groups, like all my friends, my wife, and lots of other people in my life have been a musical connection. And so that power of music to bring people together was such an important thing. My university degree was in psychology, and as much as possible throughout that degree, I was trying to steer everything towards the psychology of music. You know, what is music doing to our brain and body? Like, why is it affecting us in so many different ways? And it led me to doing experiments around the effect of different types of music on the performance of a task. And the task was people to complete this maze, and we played different types of music, fast, slow, irregular, regular, and we timed people to do this maze, and it was amazing, the results, because there was a significant difference between the time of completion of the task when the music was faster to when the music was slower, and all the different settings that we had. And the fastest times were kind of obviously I'd say now is with the faster paced music, and it's simply because human beings are rhythmical, you know, entities. We're very rhythmical from when we're even in the mother's womb. We can start to hear the mother's heartbeat. That's a rhythm. We can hear the mother's speech. That's another rhythm. And we latch onto those rhythms that we hear in life. We entrain ourselves to those, that tempo of those rhythms. So when the music is faster, then we'll work a little bit faster. And when we're in a restaurant and the music is a certain type, you know, we'll chew in time to that music. We'll operate in time. So we're very rhythmical in that kind of sense. So that led me into thinking, wow, this is a really powerful thing. I'm getting this firsthand experience of this as a DJ when I'm playing music, and especially at that time, playing music in a lot of bars as background music, and seeing the kind of effect that if I was playing a set that seemed to fit the environment and fit the vibe, then people would have a more pleasurable experience. They'd probably stay longer. They'd maybe stay right to the end. They'd maybe put the best and actually ask what music was playing. So it would cut through that idea of kind of background music working on your subconscious. So it would operate in lots of different ways. And that led to me post-university to spin out part of this project into a music consultancy business, which I called Open Ear. And that was working with different brands across the world, actually, to help them with the music that they play in their spaces, you know, in their commercial spaces as background music. But we didn't like to call it that because it was so powerful as a medium. So really kind of like them understand the psychology and power of music to create the right environment for the audience, to tell a brand narrative, to tell a brand story that speaks to their kind of brand ethics and ethos. And then to curate that as an ongoing, everlasting experience, like from the minute they open to the minute they close business every day, 7 days a week, selecting songs and updating those songs and just helping them keep on top of that kind of cultural conversation that they might have. So I ran that for about 15 years and at the same time kind of became a DJ and a music producer and had a career of that in my own, in its own right. So I was playing at festivals and clubs and having a nice time there. I've released 5 albums now of my own music. And I think just coming into the pandemic, I'd had this kind of yearning to go back to the books. You know, I'd ran this consultancy for a long time, but I still had this kind of desire to understand more about what music was doing to us. You know, it's just this never ending like thing where you just pick off a layer and then that kind of gives you more kind of a level of interest into another depth of discovery. And so I decided to train in sound therapy. I trained in sound therapy with the British Academy of Sound Therapists. So that's really just looking at sound therapy or sound healing, as sometimes it's known, as a means of kind of bringing together, you know, music for the good of the listener, you know, their health, how music can be used as a tool to help reset a nervous system, help make people de-stress, perhaps help with sleep, and lots of different kind of conditions that people might suffer from. That led me to the creation of my Swell Studio that I run currently now. So that's working with, I guess, different wellness different brands, some academic institutions as well, to help them with the sound that they play, with this kind of lens on kind of like health as being a kind of core driver of that. And we developed this bit of technology working with the University of the Arts in South London, which has then led to the creation of the Swell Spa app that we have on the App Store. And that's a sound wellness tool. It's it uses the principles from sound therapy, but also then brings in another of the main kind of aspects of sound that I think are really pertinent, especially when you're talking about health, which is the sound of the natural world. And what I've come to recognize over the last 5 years of doing this is the sound in nature is such an important and powerful tool just in itself that we often don't give it credit for. I mean, 80% of us live in urban environments now, and the access to nature is somewhat limited. And so part of what this app does is captures field recordings from different, you know, spots of natural beauty or places around the world and delivers that as a listening experience, and then starts to build in like some of the sound therapy kind of principles, like how sound and frequency can be used to kind of affect brain and body in different ways, and other musical elements that help to ground the experience in something that people can recognize and relate to and things like that. So that's been part of the journey, and Yeah, and there's a lot of other kind of subsidiary projects that I'm involved with that are all to do with sound in this kind of way. But maybe we can touch on them as this conversation unfolds.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, it's such an incredible sort of backstory, but such an organic sort of story, isn't it, to how you've grown through music and it's opened up for you. And I think it's wonderful to see the kind of evidence and some of the activations, which I'll ask you to share with us, that you've been involved in, and just the difference they make to people's health. I mean, I think intrinsically people recognize music is powerful and can move them and can influence their mood. But I don't think people necessarily, on the whole, realize just how many health benefits there are to sort of music and how intrinsic that can be. You've said there naturally the rhythm, you know, we're rhythmical. So we get involved in the rhythm and naturally that might influence our productivity and our performance. But actually some of the work you've been doing, I mean, everything from, you know, with Imperial College London, the stuff you've been doing with sort of biosonification and start. I mean, it's incredible to see the diversity in the way that you've brought music to life for people. Tell us about some of those kind of key activations over this last few years and how they've helped people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we as a society in the UK and elsewhere have placed music in this kind of entertainment box. And that is a huge industry. And the music industry kind of, you know, funnels itself. You know, there's a whole industry around that. It's a multi-billion dollar industry around selling music and musical experiences as live concerts and performances and, you know, the whole streaming industry with Spotify and the rest of it kind of, you know, is a vehicle for that. But music discovery and all those things are fantastic and great. And it brings a lot of people pleasure, you know, just from the being able to listen to songs and relate to the artists, etc. But there's a whole other side of music that I think is often kind of about, or maybe not talked about as much, which is like music is just this core driver that you know, can facilitate better health in many different ways, and it's something that's so primary to us. You know, music has existed since the earliest Homo sapiens kind of like dwelled on the earth. You know, there's the bone flutes from, you know, millennia ago that indicate that music was used as a communication tool, music was used as a healing tool, music was used as a lullaby, so for a sleep tool. So all of these things that we kind of talk about in the kind of health and wellness space with music have existed for so long. So it's ancient wisdom, as the podcast is known as. So some of the projects that I've been involved with, I mean, you mentioned within psychedelics. So I've been working with Imperial College for the last 3 or 4 years. I've got the Institute of Psychedelic Therapy there. So pioneering this kind of burgeoning field of research around psychedelic drugs to just treat a range of different mental health conditions. You know, depression and anxiety are two of those, but it goes wider than that. The first trial I was involved with was a pain study, so sufferers of chronic pain, fibromyalgia condition. And then the study I've been working on this year, it's about to go live, I think, in the next couple of months, is the guide for addiction, so gambling addicts. So it's been used or tested at least to on a number of different conditions. And the idea is that you're in a clinical setting, you're in a hospital. It's not just about taking the psychedelic drug. There's a pre and post therapeutic side of that, where you work with a CBT therapist, talking therapy, etc. will be very much part of that whole kind of treatment journey for patients. All of the patients that do these kind of trials, by the way, are treatment resistant. So they're at the end of their tether, unfortunately, with everything that's been available to them, you know, drugs, etc., other kind of holistic health therapies or whatever, that they've tried everything and they've got to this point where it's still not managed to cure them of the illness that they have. And so they've got to this point where they can try the psychedelic drug. Obviously, it's not going to be for everyone, but the results are really promising. And how music kind of factors in, it's music is known in this kind of domain as the hidden therapist, which I think is interesting because it refers back to what I was talking about in terms of music working on your subconscious. It's there as a guide. So essentially, you go into the hospital room, you're given a very large dose of a psychedelic drug, normally psilocybin, so, you know, essentially synthetic magic mushrooms. And you're given a blindfold and you're given headphones. And there's two guides there that are there to everything from your side of things is as managed as possible. And so the headphones, so the listening experience is like such a primary part of the overall experience for the patient as they go through this journey. And this journey could be anything from like 6 hours to 8 hours in this room. So it's a significant amount of time. It's a big undertaking. And the task for me as a music curator was to find enough music to last that length of time and even longer, just in case. It was to break up, you know, as indicated by the research, the arc of the psychedelic experience into six different stages, so different phases, as they called them. And then the music was there to try and guide and present a kind of like backdrop, a journey, if you like, to take them to the places they need to get to. And the interesting thing, I think, from the sort of psychology and neurophysiology kind of point of view is that at this peak of experience, you know, the phase three, phase four, where the drug is really, you know, taking hold, and, you know, they're experiencing all these things that maybe you've read about, the ego death, you know, this detachment of kind of like the idea of self as oneness that one might feel if they're at the height of that psychedelic state. The music there is designed to be kind of very sad, very melancholic, and it's to kind of try to evoke these kind of emotions within the brain that maybe trigger similar processes as they experience when they're experiencing the condition that they suffer from, you know, it's often set by a trauma or whatever. But when they're in this sort of almost safe space of the psychedelic state, it gives them an opportunity to rewire their brain, you know, so make different neural connections within the brain that hopefully mean that they can start to look and have different perspective on how they experience that kind of the illness. And by doing so, they hopefully will be able to then find solutions themselves internally to then deal with that condition in a new way as they emerge out of that experience and then, you know, go back to the normal world. And, you know, that, as I said, doesn't work for everyone, but it is having very promising results, to the point where I think like 30%, you know, maybe are completely cured. Others are cured for a certain amount of time and then they relapse slightly. But ultimately, you know, it's very promising, and especially when you compare it to this kind of SSRI kind of antidepressant kind of drugs that are on the market that don't really do anything to really get into the core of like why this trauma, this depression, this condition manifests itself in the body, in the brain.
Hold that thought as we just take a short commercial break.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond. Let's jump back into our conversation with Brian D'Souza. It's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's such an interesting area of study, and I can absolutely understand why it sucks you in. It's so exciting. And obviously, I'm, as a practicing psychotherapist and Chinese medicine practitioner myself, you know, I love the idea of what psychedelic medicine can do. What I worry about is the way people are guided through that process, supported through that process, and then integrated back into society. So we've got retreats and all sorts launching all over the place and people getting put into all sorts of different sort of states in not necessarily the right way, or they haven't done enough of the work to go into the process in the first place and sort of then, as I say, be guided and integrated back into it. And so it's a little bit alarming. But what I love about the integration of music into this very controlled, very mindful study and sort of well-supported study is what music might also do to help rebalance people months later, years later, you know, that same curated track or variations of it in and of itself can be part of the ongoing solution, can't it? It just has such scope and possibility.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's my hypothesis, and it's something that I've talked to Imperial about. And it's just amazing that, yes, this is a whole body of research that is being funded now. And, you know, there's there's a whole kind of rebirth of this sort of psychedelic therapy that's happening globally, led by, Johns Hopkins in the US and Imperial in London. But at the same time, it's still so new that things such as music post psychedelic therapy experience, there hasn't been so much research done around like the potency of that. Now, to me, it sounds obvious because even just going back to what I said in the opening around how it's a memory anchor for my childhood, and my childhood memories have been shaped by memory of music. The same kind of principle exists here because having undergone that psychedelic experience, most times that's a supremely memorable moment in someone's life. It's generally kind of recognized as the top five most memorable moments that they will ever have in their whole lifetime. And so therefore, like, that is going to bring it to the forefront of their mind. And if music is there and there's a particular song in the playlist, or maybe there's several that then can help bring them back and trigger that memory of being in that experience, then hopefully that's going to help their brain think, okay, I want to get back to that way where I'm rewired and I'm able to deal and handle my condition in a slightly more reasonable manner or whatever. So yeah, that's the power of it. But again, this is the exciting thing, I guess, is there's still a lot of work and research to be done.
Well, you can see the possibility of that within the addiction work as well, can't you? I support a lot of people with something we call the NADA technique, which is a technique that was developed, a sort of 5-point ear needling technique developed for detoxification and sort of drug addiction back in the 70s. And it's had huge success with helping just, reactivate that parasympathetic nervous process and just help calm people in the height of their addiction. It's always been integrated into their rehabilitation program, so alongside talk therapy. But actually, sometimes people find it really hard to articulate how they're feeling or to revisit trauma and whatnot. So actually, this becomes a silent therapy too. There's no need for conversation. There's no need for dialogue. Language barriers aren't an issue. Body exposure isn't an issue. So culturally, it's really sort of diverse. It's an incredibly powerful sort of treatment, and more evidence to the physiological impact of that treatment. But I think curate music into that as well, but also from an addiction point of view, when we know actually people really do need that support, whether it is 3 months on, 3 years on, 30 years on, that ability to kind of bring themselves back into the positives and, as you say, anchor that kind of recall, which memory just has the power to do, kind of memory and sort of smell, isn't it? There are two sort of scents that really do anchor us back really, really amazingly. Mm. Tell us about some of the other work, because, you've done so much, Brian. I was just going through your website, and we'll put all those details at the end so people can kind of have a look, because there's some, actually not just a list of kind of people you've worked for and projects you've worked on, but there's some beautiful descriptions and explanations about those projects as well. So there's so much insight on your Brian D'Souza website, and some of the, companies you've worked for, but I love this kind of plants can dance sort of principle, and just the name of it itself. Tell us more about plants can dance.
Yeah, the name is designed to be quite playful and a little bit provocative, I guess. And I guess it was born out of this exploration I had, this desire really to kind of collaborate with the natural world with the music that I was making. And I think going into the pandemic, as well as training in sound therapy, I also kind of started to do some workshops in like field recording. So recording with different microphones, and did a whole session with Chris Watson, who's the BBC, nature field recordist that does all the Attenborough stuff or whatever. And he's a proper expert with different microphone techniques or whatever. So I got really invested in that. And I would go to my local parks with a microphone, with headphones. And that was amazing to me, that practice, which was just, it's just purely about listening. It was about listening attentively, being in the moment. It's almost like a mindfulness meditation. But when you've got those headphones on and you've got microphones and you're able to pick up a heightened soundscape from around the world, from around the place you're in, then you could be really in that moment with the sounds of nature all around you, which was incredible. The problem I found was that once the lockdown started to ease, then all the what they call the anthropony, the man-made sounds, started to come back. So sirens, I mean, I live in London, so sirens is a common sound mark that you hear everywhere, you know, obviously planes and cars and everything else. So it became more difficult to get that very blissful sound of nature, you know, being in the urban environment that I was in. So I started to look for other kind of means of which I could collaborate with nature, with music. And I found this kind of whole field of biosonification. It's essentially a conversion of data that can be collected from anything living, the natural organism, such as a plant or a mushroom, fungi or whatever, or just, you know, anything. I've done projects with the sea, for example, and it's a conversion of what you can extrapolate from that. So often with plants and fungi, they're creating this electrical output. It's this bioelectricity that is there. And the devices that are, you know, now ready on the market can take that electrical output, that fluctuation that's kind of happening in real time, and make a conversion from that into a musical note, you know. So such a fluctuation can be then translated into a C on a keyboard, for example, and then tuned and manipulated by myself as an artist to make compositions based on that kind of electrical output. So I find that like very kind of sort of fun and tactile means of collaborating with the natural world, collaborating with plants, collaborating with fungi. And I did a number of different projects. We did installation for Glastonbury. We did installations at the Chelsea Flower Show. I've done stuff in schools. I've done stuff in art institutions, the V&A and the Tate, and, you know, lots of different places, festivals all around the world. And it's just fascinating because what it does do is it starts a conversation with people around like how we experience nature and how often like nature and natural things are kind of hidden in plain sight, you know, especially in the urban environments, but just elsewhere. We've kind of take it for granted almost. And by hearing nature in this kind of way, with this kind of biosonification kind of means, it means that people can like just have a slight kind of shift in the brain, maybe a slight paradigm shift where they're kind of going, oh, wow, it's... It sounds obvious when you say it, but it's like it's living, breathing, it's interacting, it's contributing, it's part of our world, and it's an important, hugely fundamental part of our world. And so by sonifying it, that's highlighting, you know, nature and nature's practices. By allowing that to happen in real time, it means that it's a thing that people can connect to in that moment as well. So anyway, as a result of all these projects and the interest in the conversation that was sparking, I decided to set up an entity called Plants Can Dance and Mushrooms Sing, inverted commas. And it was a sort of fun and playful name to call and just frame all the kind of projects I was doing in this kind of world. And we started doing the residency in London. So it's roughly every 2 months in East London. And it's a little Sunday afternoon, very chilled kind of thing. It starts off with a workshop so people can kind of, you know, experience and kind of get to, you know, actually make music from plants themselves using a number of different devices that we offer. And then there's usually some guest speakers and sort of TED Talk style presentations from people. And then a little bit of a, you know, a deep listening or musical experience, perhaps. I mean, the format kind of varies every time. But that's been fantastic. And what that's led me to do is make these connections with different artists, some of which have become quite famous, I think, certainly in an internet sort of sensation way. You know, you've got people like Modern Biology, this guy from Canada, Tarun, who's, you know, he's got hundreds of thousands of followers with his mushroom music and stuff on TikTok and Instagram and things. Anyway, I've been able to make these connections, and now the current project I'm working on is a compilation album of plant music that will come out at the end of June, and we're going to be publishing almost like a book, but a magazine that will accompany that. It's got a lot of different kind of insight and articles written by practitioners in this field, related people that that just show the kind of depth and breadth of the kind of conversations, you know, brings in lots of things around, you know, ways of listening, how we can, you know, the power of nature, more than human perspectives, and how we kind of, maybe reshape the kind of hierarchy that we currently have of, you know, humanism, and we're at the top of the food chain and everything like else. So it's hopefully sparks some conversation and kind of, it turns people on to the natural world in a slightly different way through music.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, we know, I mean, the just abundance of evidence that's come out around nature and environment and just how critically important it is alongside social connection to our fundamental health and well-being. And obviously a big part of that is the soundscape that comes with it, isn't it? And I remember us talking a few years back, actually, and gut health had had its kind of Zoe kind of emergence had started, and everyone was talking about the magic of the microbiome, you know, as kind of Hippocrates once said, all disease starts there, and suddenly science now says, yes, actually, this is way more important than we thought it was, and it's so fundamental to our overarching health and well-being. But actually, there's a lot of evidence to prove that locally sourced, organic, natural sort of foods around us resonate much deeper with our own microbiome than imported foods. And I remember we talked about sort of whether there was a synergy with that with music, you know, whether kind of actually some of the music we've either grown up with, that anchored memory, as you talked about, that kind of influences our childhood, but actually whether some of, you know, the certain soundscapes within nature kind of make us feel safer, you know, whether there's some sort of nervous system regulation with that, you know, within the kind of the birds and the sounds we're hearing to kind of what we might hear if we were brought up in Bali or, you know, sort of Dubai or and I wonder what sort of your feelings are around kind of how music can kind of ground us and how that those natural sort of sounds kind of resonate to us in different situations. Don't go away, because we're just going to take a quick commercial break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science with me, Michelle Hammond. Let's jump back into our conversation with Brian D'Souza.
Yeah, there's a great theory that I always refer to, the attention restoration theory. Kaplan and I think it's husband and wife. That kind of did the research on this, but essentially it says that, you know, we have a limited capacity to be attentive all the time, and we all know this, right? We can't be focused, you know, all throughout the day, you know, 100%. What the research looked at was how best to replenish this depleted attention ability that we have over the course of a day, and what like getting out into nature, so going for a walk in a park, or if you're walking towards work, then, you know, go through, you know, a kind of natural environment as best as what you can, is going to be the best way for you to restore that attentional network that you have. And then, you know, come back to work, if it was, you pop out to the park on a lunch break, and you'd be much more focused, much more able to kind of get on with your to-do list and whatever else you have to get on with in that day. So I find that very interesting, because you can look back throughout history of like some of the greatest thinkers, and they, you know, if you read a little bit about them, like they'll always have a summer house or a getaway that's in nature, or they'll have an afternoon off, like, you know, most of the time they're not working all the time. And I think that our society, with this busy kind of bustling lives that we live and the attention economy and everything else, just gears us up to like constantly be trying to work, or we're always on our phones and we're also like getting a notification and things like that. But actually, like, that's not helping us, you know, become, you know, more productive or more creative or any of the things that we're striving in an ideal world to be. So yeah, to be able to remember to get out into nature as regularly as possible is a good thing. Obviously, you've got the whole world of forest bathing or Shinrin Yoku that kind of speaks to that as well, and the health benefits that are related to that that are kind of is well proven, I guess. I've been interested in this kind of thinking with the latest project that I'm doing, which is the Sniffers app. So born out of an installation I did called Sniffers Forest, and that was born out of the writings of a guy in the 70s called R. Murray Schafer. Talks about rising noise levels and how that's affecting our health, and how he advocates for this concept of a sniffer's garden, you know, places of acoustic delight, so we can go and we can detach ourselves from the noise and the stress that of all that. And so I've been creating this kind of app, which is essentially a world map with points plotted on it that have these kind of coniferous gardens. So it's audio soundscapes recorded, like using field recordings. I mean, all these places, the places I've been to. So over the years, I've traveled to all parts of the world and oftentimes taken field recordings. So creating these soundscape compositions based on the natural world, but then, you know, as I mentioned before, the sound therapy kind of elements and musical elements, and trying to kind of create these kind of sound environments that allow for that attention restoration to take place. So if you can't then get out into nature, then maybe you can just plug in and listen to it, you know, via this app, and it gives you this tool in your pocket to allow you to facilitate different things in your life every day. So that's the kind of current project I'm working on as well. And hopefully that will come out and be an app on the App Store at some point this year.
Which is amazing, isn't it? And I love that idea because, as you say, I mean, you know, the evidence around getting out into nature is vast and just growing as a body of really high quality evidence all of the time. And it's one of those things, isn't it, where I always say it's kind of experiential, not intellectual. So even with the body of theory and evidence out there, we know it because we feel it ourselves, don't we? When we just get out there and do it, whether it's for a minute grounding before the next call, or whether it's to properly sort of immerse out in there, but to be able to have the ability to kind of connect into that sound and space if we're unable to. And particularly I'm thinking about some of those people that we work with that are in chronic states of health and maybe are bedbound or, you know, sort of unable to get out for whatever reasons, or just the locations they live in, or the support and care they might have to sort of do that as much as they would like. That ability to kind of bring them to those spaces psychologically and physiologically through sound and immersive sound is really powerful.
Yeah, because there was a great study done, I think, in the pandemic or whatever, in hospital with different patients, and they found that the patients that were situated next to a window or had capacity to get outside or whatever would heal faster, you know, like just compared to someone that was just in a closed room without access to nature through the window. So that was an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, for how we design kind of rehabilitation and sort of medical spaces and educational spaces and workplaces, I mean, it's all really important, isn't it? You know, when we're in these urban environments, that we curate them in as much harmony with nature and the natural world around us as possible, if we really want to thrive and sort of live optimally. Everyone's talking about longevity at the moment, aren't they? And all these latest kind of peptides and sort of injectables and God knows what that they can kind of take. And there's a part of me that loves that emerging science, but also just as actually that forward to basics and just regrounding ourselves in those core fundamentals of giving ourselves opportunities to slow down, really connect with sort of who we are and the people around us and unleash our creativity and reconnect into our purpose, you know, all actually support longevity really well. And they don't cost anything either. You know, there's stuff we can sort of do. I mean, you've got so many exciting projects going out, and I cannot wait for the Coniferous app. So we'll make sure that our listeners can sign up for that. I think there's some early registration you were telling me, Brian, that they can have at the moment in readiness so that they can be one of the first to hear.
Yeah, all they need to do is go to coniferous.app, and there's just very simply a button on there saying register for early access. So if they do that, then they'll be one of the first to get access to this app, and hopefully that's going to be on the App Store in a couple of months, if I could just find some time in the day.
I know. Well, that's it. You are super busy. You were telling me about a new sort of activation you've got going on with Six Senses in London coming up, which is another kind of very revered sort of wellness club sort of opening in town. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking to them for the last few months, and they've just opened up a Six Senses place. So it's less about a hotel. It's more about, I guess, it's kind of leaning on the kind of members club kind of idea. So yeah, they wanted me to do a residency with the Plants Can Dance kind of concept, and to bring invited speakers down. So this Thursday, we're doing the first, or maybe it's last Thursday, depending on when this podcast comes out or when anyone's listening to it. So I've invited Sophia Snapp, who's a climate ambassador. She works with the charity Earth Percent, which is a charity I also support with my work. And it was founded by Brian Eno. It's basically the Music Industry's Climate Charity. And she's been doing great work in this space of how the music industry can support climate initiatives. And she recently just did a TEDx talk in Ibiza. And that was fantastic and went down really well. I was helping her with some of the sounds. We were talking about sounds that were out of tune, sounds that were in tune, you know. So she'll be my kind of guest speaker at this event. And it should spark an interesting discussion.
It sounds amazing. And I think it's, again, we'll put those details on the recording so people can access and look at how they can sort of engage in that. So for people listening who are kind of new to sound and thinking, you know, gosh, yeah, I mean, I've just kind of been maybe a passive participant. You know, I play my background music and the radio's on, or I have my favourite tracks, or I dance every now and again to sort of some old school memories as they come up, but want to use sound more constructively and more considerately, whether it's about the type of sound they listen to or the way they listen to it. What advice would you share with them, Brian?
I think it's interesting. Yeah, the way that you listen is, I think, the most powerful thing. I think we all have this internally. I think we're all actually expert listeners, but maybe we most of our time just hearing everything because there's so many different things to kind of attend to. It's like, how do you focus your attention? So I think tuning your listening skills is such a powerful thing that we've often forget about. And I think the ways to do that, I mean, one of the ways to do it, well, think about like the last time you sat down and just listened to an album for the sake of listening to that album. You know, it's so much of the time you're listening to music is as a background music, is secondary to the primary thing, whether that's cooking, driving, working out, whatever. Just try like finding your favorite bit of music, your favorite album, and listening to that for 45 minutes or however long it takes. Like, that's such a hard thing for us to do in this day and age, you know? So that's one thing. It's just, and then because I have great memories of doing that when I was a kid, you know, as a teenager, just buy the CD, come to my bedroom, listen to it. And that would be the only thing I was doing. It was incredible. But I think we've lost that. And then I think other thing to think about is a very simple exercise where you're in a park or out in the countryside or whatever, is just break down the soundscape into its like three constituent parts, like the geophony, which is the planetary sounds that you might hear, the biophony, which is the sounds that are generated from living organisms, you know, birds and plant life, etc. And the anthropony, which is the human-made sounds. And as soon as we start to break down into different categories, and then you can have subcategories from that, it starts to become such a richer and more dense listening environment. Because what human beings are really great at is putting things in little boxes. So we're in a forest and we think we're listening to a forest. But actually a forest is made up of, you know, millions of different sounds and things happening concurrently. And we often can't attend to those things for a variety of different reasons, obviously. I mean, obviously it's a good thing that we can put things in boxes to make sense of the world. But sometimes we just need to slow down and give ourselves the opportunity to then break that down and understand what the world is doing around us and how we can then tune in and listen to it. And I think by doing that as, you know, regularly as possible, you can start to then tune your ability to be more attentive, and your listening skills and everything else will come from that. And that might be something that then helps you with your everyday life. You know, when you're working, obviously we need to be able to attend to things. If we're listening to our boss give a presentation or something, we should be attending to that. And quite often we're just easily distracted. So I think that these ways of listening are really important, and they're under threat. So I think we would do well to remember like these kind of things, and simple practices like as I've just described will hopefully help people to do that. And that's, you know, obviously the tool like the Sniffers app is what that will become is also an opportunity to be able to do that and give people a headphone listening experience that will allow them to allocate some time for listening to nature and different spots around the world.
Amazing. I mean, Brian, as always, I could literally curl up with a cup of tea and listen to you all day. Your passion is so palpable and it makes me just want to go and kind of, you know, sort of get out into nature and curate sounds and revisit back. And I'm definitely going to go and re-diarize an opportunity to listen to those CDs that hold such special sort of memories for me. Because as you say, it's often, and I'm guilty of it myself, I'm one that kind of uses nature often, and I love the sound of birdsong. So I'm out in it regularly and it is the one thing that grounds me. I don't do enough of deep listening within that. I listen to those birds and that's where my energy and focus goes. But I cannot remember the last time I just listened to music without it just being in the background, as you say, cooking, cleaning, working, whatever. But just to kind of listen to that. And actually, you reconnected me with that little girl in me there as well, who just used to lie on the bed and listen to those tracks and sing along, you know, and it's such a beautiful sort of thing to do and such an easy way to kind of be more mindful, isn't it? And to get into that real monotasking sort of mindset rather than that constant-ness of trying to do more all of the time.
Yes, absolutely. Great.
Well, it's an absolute joy to spend time with you, Brian. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Ancient Wisdom and Modern Science. We'll put all the details below and across their socials so people can find out more and also sign up for that Soniferous app and join you at some of these workshops you do coming up in the future, because they sound an absolutely incredible way to get involved. And I know the amount of evidence you put behind what you do, as well as passion, is absolutely world-class and leading. So, if you want to do anything with music or learn more, then Brian is your go-to. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much. Yeah, just to quickly add that my blog and best way to follow the work is astateofflow.com. It's a Substack page. So you'll get a weekly newsletter where I talk about a lot of themes that I've talked about today. So hopefully people can follow me on that.
Amazing. So that was stateofflow.com.
Stateofflow.com. F-L-O without the W.
Lovely to speak to you. Thanks so much for joining.
Thank you. Thanks, Michelle.
Wow, he really is so fascinating, isn't he? What an incredible storyteller and what an incredible body of work he's committed to. It really is a fascinating subject. And to know that something so constant, so familiar, can also be so transformative when we begin to pay attention. As always, learning that living well doesn't always mean doing more or spending more, but often simply noticing what's already influencing you. If you'd like to explore more of Brian's work, you can find him at astateofflow.com. As you mentioned, that flow has no W at the end, so it's astateofflow.com. You can also be first to register for the release of the app he mentioned, the soniferous.app, and also log in to swellstudio.io, all offering a deeper way to experience sound and learn more about the incredible activations, evidence, and work Brian has shared today. And as always, if you've enjoyed today's episode, do take a moment to like, follow, and share it. It really does help these conversations reach the people who need them. To learn more about my own work, you can visit our professional training website at tpot.org.uk. That's tpot.org.uk. Or you can connect with me for one-to-one support via my private practice website at michellehammond.co.uk. This is Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science, here on UK Health Radio with me, Michelle Hammond. Until next time, take care of yourself and those around you.